Levels.
1, 2. You can't win if you don't play.
Hey, wow, yeah. Here we are.
It's been so long since we've done this, I forgot how.
Yeah. It's like a buck.
All right, sir. You ready for that slate?
Okay, episode Nighthawks 2019, Volume 4, Issue 1, The Alarming Captain Marvel? I don't know. Anyway, here's the countdown. 3, 2, 1.
KOKW calling. I'm on international frequency. Come in.
I am Torgo. I take care of the place while the master is away.
He's trying to cheat us, Pepe. All this talk is so he can get a better price, so he can make fools of us.
Yeah, so easy to make a fool of me. Why don't you try it sometime?
Well, I got something done. I got a job at Mr. Greenfeld's sporting goods store. And he promised to do anything he can to help me to get the Texans.
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up. I had a reason for inviting each guest. I wanted kind of a cross-section. They share one thing. They all need money. Now let's see if they're brave enough to earn it.
And you call this a party?
Could be.
Hello? Is this thing on?
I think so. I don't know. It's dusty. Yeah,
there's a little dust on the bottle, but it's still filled with Grampy's moonshine.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you are, in fact, not listening to 538 Podcast. I am not Galen Druk, and this is not Nate Silver with me, nor do we have the likes of Perry Bacon Jr. or... Claire
Malone, and she's a delight.
Yes.
Here's a true story in case Trevor doesn't cut this entire digression. at one point, 538 had a job opening for, I believe, what would be Micah Cohen's job.
Oh,
and I sent it to Trevor, and they sent it to Trevor because he was looking for work at the time, and because they are actually technically part of ESPN. He looked at the URL and immediately sent it back with, "What the hell would I want to work for ESPN for?"
Oh.
And I'm like,
guilty, guilty. What you are listening to is the Nighthawks podcast, the cinema-centric podcast for people who like to stay up late, or at least who like to pretend that they stay up late and like to brag about such.
I stay up till 8 a.m. every day.
So who are you, by the way?
Oh, my name is Matt Foster. I am the other person.
Yes, and I am the other person. I'm Trevor T. Trujillo. We're your hosts for the Nighthawks podcast, back after a brief winter break. You know, got some things taken care of, got a little reading time in between the movies, but Matt, what have you been watching lately? Catch us up.
Well, last thing I saw in a theater was Arctic with Mads Mikkelsen.
Oh,
it's just him alone, quite literally chewing scenery at a couple points. It is the tale of a man who is, when the movie starts, he's already been stranded in the Arctic for a while. And then what happens is he finally contacts rescue, and his rescue crashes, and he has to rescue his rescue.
Hey! Yeah!
Hey! So squeeze like this. Squeeze.
Yeah, that's good.
That's right. Don't worry. It'll be here tomorrow. Or the day after tomorrow. Don't worry. She's running out of time. I have to find help.
And because he's in a stable place with food and water when the movie starts, and because one of these people is very injured, he has to try to drag them on a toboggan about a 10-day hike overland in the Arctic with whiteout weather potential. So it's just like, it's like a kind of like reminiscent of The Gray or The Edge. It's a proverbial human versus nature flick. Which I don't know how I feel about those sometimes. Like sometimes I'm like, are these just atheist passion plays? Is this like, watch all this stuff happen to this guy so that you're grateful for your heater and your... And I'm sitting there and he's like praising the heavens that he brought up like a raw trout, and he's eating it raw, and he's so happy to have a raw trout, and he's even like eating the liver because he needs every calorie. And I'm sitting there with like a pizza and a thing of popcorn, and I'm like, that's a poor guy. I don't know. What have you been watching?
I had my girlfriend turn me on to Letterkenny, which I have been watching on Hulu. And I think there's about 7 seasons out. I'm definitely late to the party on this. Like, I'm going to fully cop to that. But holy cow, now that I've hopped on the bandwagon, what a joy this show is.
Yeah, Letterkenny is a Canadian sketch comic named Jared Kelso. His friends, including stand-up comic K. Trevor Wilson, who plays his girthy compatriot, Squirrely Dan. And they are a small family of choice that run a farm in Ontario. And it's about them and the weird characters they encounter in town.
You know what I really like about it is it's got that feel like maybe if Kevin Smith had made a TV series in the 90s, but with the knowledge of what we know about TV series from the modern era. That doesn't make a ton of sense, but it's that same indie, this is just the story of a small town and its quirky characters. Like, we get that in Clerks, we get that in Mallrats. It's just them talking about sex, them talking about partying, them talking about drinking. And it's a real small town, limited locations, great cast, really spitfire dialogue, very Canadian.
100% pure organic, grass-fed, triple A Alberta beef.
Better believe it's Alberta beef.
You got there, top sirloins?
Yeah, New York to grain-fed.
3 times the omega-3s and grass-fed.
Bought and paid for.
Well, you're going to want them aged if they're top sirloins.
Pump the brakes. 2 things. 1, now we'll let those sit for 10 to 15 minutes till the room temperature. 2, where's the salt and pepper, bud?
Don't you start.
S&P, the choice for me.
I paid a sea hare just shy of 20 for each of these sea suckers, and I will not be told how to cook them.
You paid 20 apiece for Alberta beef?
Only Alberta beef.
Well, no guff, but I wouldn't pay 20 apiece for Japanese Wagyu.
Always Alberta beef.
Hard yes, but I wouldn't pay 20 apiece for Australian Wagyu.
Better want a ribeye if it's a Wagyu.
1-inch dick top sirloin. Grill at 400. 4 minutes aside, down the hatch.
You are f***ing up, bud.
That's textbook.
Not without the S&P.
Those fine ranchers in Alberta would be a sea hare away from not sending it here if they knew you were sprinkling salt all over the sea suckers.
You're a sea hare away from getting sea sucking socked, good buddy.
Montreal steak spice really should be part of this conversation.
1-inch thick top sirloin steak. Salt and pepper heavily. Grill at 400. 4 minutes total. Flip each minute to get the good grill marks. Let sit for 2 minutes. Down the hatch.
Flip twice.
Grill marks, bud.
Sacrilege.
I will strike you.
Blasphemy.
Do you want to get striked?
Finish the whole thing off with the real nice herbs and garlics, bud.
Don't up my steak dinner, Derry.
Any decent chef will tell you don't even want to let those things touch the grill. Make it drier and a fart. What you want to do, pan sear it both sides, finish her off in the ovens.
Well, see, now that sounds like overhandling to me.
You'd be overhandling them, Squirrely Dan.
Well, he'd be Squirrely Dandling.
Oh, yeah, me and Gordon Ramsay are both morons.
Now, I have to admit, when I first took a stab at this, I did not enjoy it. And I will totally cop to the fact that when I tried it, I was not in a good headspace. And I sat down to watch it, and I'm like, man, if this is just going to be 7 seasons of these dudes busting balls for a half hour at a time, I don't think this is for me. There is certainly a lot of that in the first season, but it's going someplace. There is actually this culmination where the different cliques around town kind of ebb and flow and come into each other's influences. And you realize that while they bust balls and while some of them probably genuinely dislike each other, there is this hometown pride that they all carry and will be willing to set aside their differences for. And in that regard, it's kind of actually a, like, there's not a character in here that's not going to be unsympathetic by the time you hit the second season. And as much as they could be caricatures and as much as they are very painted with broad strokes, these characters end up being sympathetic. We have some decent arcs and some character introspection. Like, there's a lot going on in this show that is really just several setups for people to sit around and talk about stuff.
If it was an American show, it would probably veer into stereotype, but they like, and like, that's another thing about it is like a bunch of people on it are LGBTQ and a bunch of people on it are like polyamorous and just like nothing is said about it.
Exactly. Like, it is like a weirdly progressive show. You do not expect this show about a small town in Canada comprised largely of people from an agricultural community being as woke as they are.
And the weird fight choreography, because our hero Wayne, the guy that owns the farm, he is the quote-unquote toughest guy in Letterkenny. And occasionally people will hear about that and they'll want to have a good Donnybrook with him to see if it's true.
It's almost like a Kong kung fu movie where the masters are coming to the different schools challenging each other.
Yeah, just about once per show they get in some kind of fight and they're just like, they're just like delightful little exercises in slow motion. And like,
actually, a couple of the performers were at South By this year. I was a little jealous.
Honestly, I'm having kind of some South By FOMO this year. It looked like it was a really good South By Southwest.
Yeah, I kind of had that too. But I'm also looking at the lines and how many people are being shut out of screenings and stuff. And like, it looks cool because we get to see the end result, but I bet if we were boots on the ground, it'd be a pain in the ass. At least that's what I'm telling
you. Tell yourself what you gotta. But,
If you're a fan of comics or even just the movies they're based on,
check out the Funny Books and Firewater podcast.
Each week, Brian,
Maya,
Todd,
and then Adam review a graphic novel
and discuss what drinking games should go along with it,
as well as recommend what adult beverages should be enjoyed.
New episode drops every Monday on iTunes, Google Play,
and Stitcher.
Funny Books and Firewater.
We're a drinking podcast with a comic book problem.
At Push My Buttons Podcast, you can get all the gaming news, information on latest releases, game reviews, and you can even watch us play some of your favorite games. Everything from Sonic the Hedgehog to God of War on YouTube and Twitch. Follow us on all the social media and listen on all your favorite apps. Just search for Push My Buttons Podcast.
You think you're the only superhero in the world? Mr. Stark, you become part of a bigger universe. You just don't know it yet.
The Avengers. That's what we call ourselves. Sort of like a team. Earth's Mightiest Heroes type thing.
Every time someone tries to win a war before it starts, innocent people die. Every time.
Brutality, the sacrifice, it changes you. I'd rather be a good man than a great king.
And once you've won, once you're king of the mountain, what happens to his mind?
He's flying. We're fighting an army of robots. And I have a bow and arrow. None of this makes sense.
Hulk smash!
Dread it. Run from it. Destiny still arrives.
Thank you.
is a universal language. I know a renegade soldier when I see one. Never occurred to me that one might come from above. Space invasion. Big car chase. Truth be told, I was ready to hang it up till I met you today. So you're not from around here.
It's hard to explain. I keep having these memories. I see flashes. I think I had a life here. But I can't tell if it's real.
We have no idea what threats are out there. We can't do this alone. We need you.
I'm not what you think I am.
So I think it's about time to talk about the movie du jour. We are going to be discussing the latest from the Marvel Disney camp. What is this, our second? Third movie post-Infinity War? I think it's our second movie post-Infinity War. And it's really hard, Matt, to think of these movies as individual franchises anymore. And I guess we'll talk about that in a bit. We watched the most recent edition, Captain Marvel, this weekend.
It's more like, yeah, it's more like a big, slow television show. But yeah, we caught up with Miss Carol Danvers.
And so just by way of a brief synopsis, and what we're going to do, folks, is we're going to give you as much general conversation about the movie as we can before we start talking spoilers, and we'll give you an audible spoiler warning. But this is a hard one to discuss in general terms. There's a lot going on here, and I think it would be doing it a disservice not to talk about it just because, you know, people haven't seen it yet. So we'll do as much as we can, but the real meat of this conversation is probably going to be behind that spoiler curtain.
Well, I'd say the synopsis of Captain Marvel is an extraterrestrial warrior arrives on an unfamiliar primitive planet after a battle in space and finds rings suspicious bells in her mind. From there, she gets involved in matters of mortal peril and involved with the early history of the Marvel Avenger Shield Initiative.
I guess, is this the first movie that we could call a prequel out of the Marvel Universe? I mean, I know that some movies are supposed to, like, canonically happen before others, but I think this is the first time we're actually going back and doing some serious retcon prequel action on anything we've seen up until this point. And that's what I'm saying. It's hard to think of these movies as not a coherent Marvel franchise. It's, and I'm going to eat my words later when we're actually talking about the movie, but that's kind of the problem I'm having. And I don't even know that it's so much a problem, but I think we're to the point now where a superhero film, which this is no longer a trend. It's no longer a fad. It's no longer the hot new thing in Hollywood. It's an established genre at this point. We could fill sections in video stores with just superhero movies if there were still...
Video store.
Yeah. And we should give shout out. I mean, video stores still exist. Mad shout outs to Videos to Go in Mills, Wyoming. Vulcan Video in Austin, Texas. And I believe, doesn't the Utah Salt Lake City Film Society have a rental option with their membership?
They do have a video rental in the base of in the lobby of the Tower Theater in Salt Lake. It's a good deep catalog of like historical movies that are hard to find on Netflix and Redbox too.
You know, what we're dealing with is that superhero movies have become their own genre and almost their own art form, and are judged by their own set of criteria. There's going to be criteria that we posit in this episode that we wouldn't apply if we were talking about The Godfather or Star Trek. And it's just kind of becoming its own thing. And I think that's what's interesting. But at the same time, we are getting to the point where it's like, I would almost rather have a season of television telling the Carol Danvers story than have to wait years between movies. But anyways, Matt, overall, how did this leave you?
What is it? This is the 23rd Marvel movie?
I have lost track, my friend.
I'm going to say it's above, like, I would say the low end of the Marvel movies are the, like, dead sequels, like the Iron Man 2, Avengers 2, Thor 2. It's definitely up out of that tier. I would place it ahead of, it's over the 50th percentile. It's a better than average one. I didn't shine on it as a standalone film as much as I did, say, Thor Ragnarok or Ant-Man and the Wasp and Guardians 1, you know. But that's kind of my taste, and I have more to say about this later, but I like the cosmic Marvel world, the weird outer space stuff. I love how this incarnation has visualized all that and executed it. That's biasing my ranking. In DC land, it's better than everything except probably Wonder Woman.
Right. I honestly think it's about on par with Wonder Woman. That's about how I felt about it, which in the DC realm is very good, which in the Marvel realm is kind of middle of the road.
I should asterisk my statement because I did enjoy Aquaman quite a bit. I forgot about the most recent
one. I haven't seen Aquaman yet. I've been a bad film fan over our break. I've been reading too much, man. It's these damn books.
We like Marvel movies better here because we're paid Disney shills.
Do you think if we admit to that on the air, we'll just get tons of listenership for people who actually buy into that conspiracy theory? Should we just allege that? Could we get in trouble for that?
I don't know, but money's money. No, for people that don't know, there is a substantial borderline conspiracy theory in the DC fan community that Marvel pays for good reviews. And like I was talking to like Trevor and some other buddies of ours, and I'm like, do you know a single movie critic that drives a full-time movie critic that drives a car that was made after 2010? And on the one hand, that means there's no big money moving, but on the other hand, it does mean that you could probably bribe a movie critic for some good barbecue. You
know? Well, I mean, Leonard Maltin, I don't know, like.
That's a different subject. That's a holdover from the good old days of institutions and papers and TV stations paying critics.
God bless you, Leonard. We love you.
Like they paid other writers. I'm talking about the poor people that write for Bloody Disgusting and Dread Central and all the other outlets that we know and love. They're feeding themselves, but they're not like, check out the Rolex I got for plugging Captain Marvel. Like, that is a fantasy scenario.
Well, Matt, we talked a little bit about video stores, and that was a good thing to bring up because that is our introduction into the world of Captain Marvel. Marvel as a company, and I think I'm a little warmer on this than you are, but they managed to cash in on a little nostalgia. That the movie starts off with the character who will be Captain Marvel crash landing into a Blockbuster Video back in the early 90s. And they managed to cash in on that nostalgia. I think the 90s nostalgia market is a market that's largely untapped right now. You know, I think things like Stranger Things and that ilk kind of awoke a feeling of nostalgia for the 1980s. I don't know that we're necessarily tapping into 90s nostalgia. And let's be fair, those people have money too. And so I think they're tapping in on this, but also by making it a prequel, it manages to get some retcon in there. It builds on the grander Marvel universe. If you are a Marvel scholar, there is stuff here to enrich your relationship with this franchise. However, I think, and I'm not sure if you agree or not, Matt, that this was a good movie for a non-fan to hop in on. I don't think a non-fan is going to enjoy Infinity War. I don't think a non-fan is going to enjoy Thor Ragnarok as much. These are really movies where they say, okay, we've established the stuff that we need to establish in other films, and so now we're just going to play on what we've established. And so this is really going back to establishing a character. She is existing in a timeline that is kind of outside what's going on in the grander Marvel continuity. And so I think that made it a little more accessible. What do you think?
I would say, like, overall, you're correct. There is a lot of, there's a lot of kind of fan service for people that know what they're looking at, but there's nothing that worsens the movie if you don't get those references. I'd give it a B on accessibility. Not quite a full on A.
I do think that somebody who doesn't know that we're setting up one of the Infinity Stones, and somebody who knows that we're not setting up Nick Fury in a future movie, that stuff is there and they may not find it rewarding, but I think somebody just sitting down to watch the story of a superhero who crash lands on Earth and gets wrapped up in between the two sides of an intergalactic war with Earth dead center in the middle, I think there's a plot there that can be enjoyed on a superficial level. And I think it's a good plot. I mean, the problem here is I think Captain Marvel is just as good as any one introduction of a Marvel character. I think it's just as good as Doctor Strange. I think it's probably better than even the first two Thor movies. It's definitely better than Iron Man 2. You know, it's a good middle-of-the-road Marvel origin story. And they managed to... And here's where we have to walk around getting political, but it's a story, it's another origin story, which I admit I'm very sick of. But in this edition, it was done from a fresh enough perspective that it actually kept it interesting. And even beyond just the perspective of a female-led major superhero franchise film, they also managed to keep it entertaining in other ways. The way they visualize memory is played with here, and I think is very entertaining and fun to watch. Brie Larson, who plays the title character, she's very charismatic and charming. She has a lot of pithy rejoinders. The dialogue is pretty spitfire and kind of fun. Like, these things are all very fun to watch as well. The problem is in the political environment we're in, and we talk a little bit about this on a very old episode where we discuss Zero Dreams of Sushi, but Captain Marvel as a movie is almost facing a handicap because it is a female-led superhero movie. This has been, for some inexplicable reason, the subject of controversy, and she almost has to do twice as well for people to say she did just as good. Unfortunately, I don't think we made that bar, nor should we have to, but it is a thing where I think some people might be giving this movie a little shorter shrift because they were expecting so much or so little from it politically, depending on which side of that argument you fall on.
Well, and just to get into it, like very briefly, without really getting into it, there was, quote-unquote, a whole thing.
Yeah.
Brie Larson, the real person, said some, she said some things that were essentially quite innocuous. She essentially gave a statement where she said that we're trying to market this movie to a diverse crowd, and the people on my press tour are not very diverse.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a pretty fair call out. Like if you go to a press tour, the average movie critic is a white male chubby guy in a Hawaiian shirt with a notepad, you know.
Hey, I feel personally attacked.
Then she doubles down on it a little bit and says, well, if that leaves you crying, die mad, you know. I'm paraphrasing. And so the internet just cooked off about it, and there was some review padding and some stuff that went on before it was plausible, before people could have seen the movie. You know, there's a bunch of talk about how they're going to go down in flames and ruin their opening weekend, which has now been proven utterly false. Great big domestic weekend, great big foreign weekend.
Where's your head at?
In the clouds. Where's yours?
On my shoulders. About to show these boys how we do it.
You ready?
Higher, further, faster, baby.
That's right.
I liked a lot of things about this. It's set in the Kree Skrull Marvel Cosmiverse, which is like one of the, like, depending who you ask, it's either the dumbest time in Marvel continuity or the greatest time, because it's these three or four races of alien people that have a big all-encompassing galactic conflict, and every one of them is superpowered by human standards.
Mm-hmm.
So like all the Skrulls are shapeshifters, and the Kree are kind of have the basic super suite, and the Shi'ar have incredibly advanced technology and psychic powers, and the Inhumans that live on the moon are superhumans so dangerous that they're not allowed on Earth because their powers are too strong. It was the 70s, and there was something in the water at Marvel Studios, man.
That was that fun.
I'm just
Jack
saying,
Kirby.
A lot of gum was chewed, a lot of Visine was applied. And that is actually, that's part of the, I wouldn't call it a con of the movie, but it's very unclear how strong a Kree is supposed to be. And it's very unclear exactly what a Skrull can do. It's very unclear how much stronger than a normal Kree is Captain Marvel. And like, and to be fair, at one point,
at
one point they do sit down and have like a talk with a Skrull, and the Skrull does reveal that it's like a skill. You have to get good at shapeshifting, and that's why some of them are better Skrull agents than others. That left me with a little bit of ambiguity, but I guess it's also like, when they do that with magic, I like it.
Mm-hmm.
If Doctor Strange's powers are unconstrained... and serve the momentary plot, I like that. I like that when they do it with Doctor Strange or with Constantine.
Uh-huh.
But when they do it with science, by God, even if it's fake science, but I want to know just how much can Superman lift? Can he lift a planet? Can he lift a... How would that even work? And I hate that about me, but...
It's okay. But, this is a place of healing.
There was a one wearer of the Miss / Captain Marvel... banner in the comics, someone who's taken on that mantle is Monica Rambeau.
Uh-huh.
And we see her here as another human acquaintance of Carol Danvers.
Well,
she is, quote unquote, just a plucky person, which also kills me. How come one Skrull can go through a wall, but Nick Fury knocks another Skrull out? I don't have a problem with it. I just want the movie to have like the two extra lines that explain it. It's a corner you can write your way out of. They're shapeshifters. They're shapeshifters that can fool a DNA test. Maybe they're not as strong when they're shifted. It's a throwaway line. Just put it in there. But.
This is very much a Captain Marvel origin story. And it's been a trope of the internet for years where some website or another reported this, and it just kind of gets quoted ad nauseum that Marvel's not doing origin stories anymore. I'm sorry, they are. Doctor Strange was very much an origin story. Ant-Man very much was an origin story. They were not traditional origin stories. Even Spider-Man Homecoming, yet again, another take on the Spider-Man origin. They managed not to beat to death the death of Ben Parker. And so they're finding different ways to do it, but they're still origin stories. And that's where I think Captain Marvel succeeds, is this is once again an origin story. And it's fresh enough from a female perspective. This is a perspective we have not seen before, or at least we've seen very limitedly in Wonder Woman, because Wonder Woman is about a woman who grew up superpowered and then has to cope with the real world. And Captain Marvel is largely that same story, but it turns out that she had a life previous to this one of an intergalactic fighter, and so she has to both contend with being a superpowered person on Earth. And it's a deeper level. And the female perspective was enough to kind of keep it fresh. But they also, in a world where we have entertaining visual elements like the powers of Doctor Strange, like I said, they still manage to play around with visualization and stylization on memory and things like that. And it makes this an entertaining watch. It's not just another origin film.
Can we spoil yet?
Yeah, I think I'm about to the spoiler curtain. Matt, do you have anything to sound off about before we put that up?
Final non-spoiler talk for the people that would be pausing it and not listening to the rest. It's a good flick. Go watch it.
Yeah, I mean, definitely worth checking out.
Give it a chance.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I think the hate it's getting is undeserved. I think it's politically driven. And yeah, those guys can just die mad about it.
Of natural causes, later.
All right.
We here at Nighthawks do not issue calls to action.
Unless it's to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Podomatic, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast aggregate. And be sure to like us on Facebook.
Well, yeah, we do call to safe legal actions, such as giving us 5 stars and a short review.
All right, Matt, speaking of legal actions, you should hit that button.
Boop.
Thanos demands silence. Go no further. There be spoilers here.
We're gonna get down. We're taking a peek behind the curtain. We're gonna get saucy, slip into something a little more comfortable. It's Nighthawks Nights tonight at the Nighthawks Diner. Matt, tell me about Captain Marvel.
Okay, what we were kind of talking around a minute ago. When we meet Captain Marvel, she's calling herself Vers, and she is a Kree with a Kree history, Kree buddies. She's in a Kree military unit and has powers only slightly greater than those of the other Kree, which we are told have been gifted to her by the cybernetic AI that runs the Kree society. She has limited recall of her past, allegedly because of that procedure that gave her the powers.
Vers.
Intelligence?
Your commander insists that you're fit to serve.
I am.
You struggle with your emotions, with your past, which fuels them. You are just one victim of the Skrull expansion that has threatened our civilization for centuries. Imposters who silently infiltrate, then take over our planets. Horrors that you remember and so much that you do not.
They deploy on a mission. The mission eventually ends up on Earth. Once on Earth, things begin to trigger her memory. So it is kind of an amnesia plot, and it's gradually revealed that she had a childhood and life on Earth, and that has been lied to about why she is so much more powerful than other Kree. She goes on a set of subquests that gradually unlock more of those powers to an even higher level, until in the very end we get a Superman tier character that can fly through outer space unassisted, and lays down filthy amounts of smack.
And in the meantime, finds out that she has been betrayed by the Kree, who are in a intergalactic power struggle with the Skrull, who end up turning out to be not quite the threat that she was told, and that they're really more of a refugee race who are fighting for their own survival in the face of galactic genocide, and that the Kree are kind of the oppressors in this situation, which I think was pretty interesting too. But really, Matt, what we're looking at here is they crammed a very complex character history of the, quote, Captain Marvel brand, managed to address quite a bit of it, managed to address or at least give nods to part of it. They made her background complex, but it comes off, and I think it works here, and I think it's a great nod to a character that not a lot of people knew about walking into the theater.
I think that was a tall ask of people, because even if you know about Captain Marvel, it's hard to know about Captain Marvel because Captain Marvel is one of those ones that's been shuffled around, rebooted, reorigined. Mm-hmm. And so they were kind of like, can we do it from scratch without invalidating any of that other stuff?
Right.
And I think they did that pretty deftly. And I liked it more once I saw the whole plot. That answered a lot of my whiny questions about why she was in particular empowered. And for in the front half of the movie, essentially her powers are not fully online. We eventually learn why and see her thwart the resistance to her tapping all the way into Captain Marvelhood. And I will say, overall, my one complaint with this movie is that while those plots were good and they were realized really well, she just doesn't get all the way down to business quite early enough in the movie for me. I wanted more fully activated Captain Marvel kicking somebody's ass out past the orbit of Pluto, which may or may not be a planet at this point in time.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me because Captain Marvel has been a title in the past, and by that I mean a title for other characters. And so we've had Captain Marvel, who is a male character. We've had Ms. Marvel. We've had several iterations that Carol Danvers has operated under. And in this movie, she goes by, what is it, three different names. It was kind of weird talking about it earlier in the podcast because you don't know whether to call her by her Kree name. You don't know whether to call it. She's not really fully Captain Marvel until the end, and she's not even really identifying with Carol Danvers until about halfway through the movie. So it's an interesting and accessible way to address a complex character background and still make it functional for a two-hour movie.
It was definitely a balancing act, and I liked what I got. But again, like, my main thing that was unsatiated is I wanted them to fight, like, outside more. Like, this is almost like a kung fu movie. Like, there's a ton of really kick-ass, like, wire-type action that happens, but it kind of happens in rooms and corridors. I mean, say what you want about, like, the Henry Cavill Superman, but when he and Zod fought off the leash, they wrecked the landscape, and they were literally bouncing from state to state. I didn't get that here. I got someone who is can definitely bend steel and leap tall buildings, but like I said, until that very end, you don't get Captain Marvel, the stellar being that could you know, tap dance with Dark Phoenix or something.
Uh-huh.
Even that, well, she can't, because that's like a continuity barrier. not even two such entities can resolve legal issues.
The movie was directed by a pair. We've got Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck, whose previous works largely spur from more episodic stuff. They've done several episodes of various television shows. But I think they did a really good job here. I like the stylistic choices. I'm going to keep harping on the way they fade in and out of memory. And especially when Carol Danvers' Captain Marvel is trussed up in the memory machine, and they're kind of fast-forwarding and rewinding, and she's experiencing it as a first-person memory. Like, I thought that was kind of fun and neat. And just lots of little things like that that made the movie visually or stylistically interesting that I really appreciated. It's like, you didn't have to do this. It's just another layer that makes this interesting to watch.
One thing they did several times that drives me nuts, they have the name that is an Earth name that they've just hyphenated. There's a character in it named Min-Irva.
Well, and I think there's also one that's just At-Lass instead of just Atlas.
Yeah. The guy that plays the sort of Skrull spokesman kind of steals a couple scenes with some pretty good comic relief.
Well, it's Ben Mendelsohn, who we've talked about on the show before. He was in Captain Marvel and Ready Player One. And he's kind of getting notorious for playing these heavy roles. But Ben Mendelsohn has the turn as this lead Skrull. And when it turns out that the Skrulls aren't quite the bad guys that we think they are, it really puts Ben Mendelsohn in a good light because he's not playing the mustache-twirling heavy, which he is very good at. He's one of the parts of Ready Player One. His performance I enjoyed. His character I wasn't in love with, but he did a really good job. He was fantastic in Rogue One, and I might even catch myself watching the new steampunk Robin Hood just because he plays the Sheriff of Nottingham. He's a good draw for me, and I think he does really well here.
Yeah, he was a scene stealer. And I'll tell you the other thing, I was actually, while I was a little confused by the ending, is because they cast Lee Pace as Ronan the Accuser, who is kind of a Kree, like big, he's kind of a big bad, and I believe he was in Guardians, and he's sort of an anti-Thor. He's a blue guy with a big hammer, and I was expecting the final throwdown in the movie to kind of be the two of them. And we didn't get there in this volume, but it should be right where the sequel starts, you know?
Uh-huh.
Hey, we also haven't talked about a certain Mr. Kitty.
Oh, we haven't talked about Mr. Kitty. What's the cat's name again?
George?
No. Goose.
Oh, yeah, Goose, because he's the
Air Force
wingman.
Cat, yeah.
That's this call sign, yeah. Yeah, there's a little kitty, and when they introduce the kitty to the Skrull, it's like, get that thing away from me. And it turns out the kitty is an undercover agent of yet another alien race, and it's called a Flurkin, and it turns into like a horrible Cthulhu monster when it needs to. Many were roasted in the belly of a Flurkin that day, I tell you.
Yeah, he's this weird kind of Lovecraftian. I mean, it would be just like Lovecraft to stick a bunch of tentacles into a cat, but it makes for some good comic moments, and it also gives us a sign into the origins of yet another Marvel character. We haven't even said the word Samuel L. Jackson up to this point. And, of course, you know, we're behind the spoiler curtain. The reason for Nick Fury's missing eye is a little cat-scratch fever.
We never, have we ever established if Nick Fury really has an empty socket or if there's some sort of gear in there?
No, we have not.
Because I've always took it to be kind of an Odin metaphor.
Well, and when we have an actual Odin in the movie, like, who needs the metaphor? Anthony Hopkins, man.
I'm sorry, somebody just sent me a picture of a really cute cat.
Oh. There's a lot going on here politically. And I think it's so weird to talk about this movie as just a couple of white guys. Which is honestly why we never really did a Black Panther episode. There's more interesting conversations to be had about that movie than the one we could offer. And I was struck with a little bit of that with this movie as well. But I also, because of the backlash, kind of felt like I wanted to come out and punch for it a little bit. But there are things in this movie. And I think when we were talking about, we paraphrased Brie Larson's comments. What's going on in this movie is there are moments, there are nods, there is inclusion, there are in-jokes, there is embedded metaphor here that is engineered to key with an audience that is female-identifying. And that while Matt and I are intelligent people and we can certainly recognize those moments, there is a cultural divide where those moments will not affect us in the way that they will affect, I think, a vast majority of the female-identifying audience for this film. And so in a lot of ways, it feels weird to talk about this because overall, I enjoyed the movie. I thought it was a really good movie. But I think almost, and, you know, I'm not speaking for an entire gender that's not mine, but I think this will probably key better and will key in a lot of different ways for a female identifying audience than it did with me. And I think that's important to recognize. And it's not a couched politic. It is firmly addressed in this. There are issues of, yes, women are strong. Women can do this too. Women bring something not only just as good as what men can bring to the table, but they also bring something unique to the table.
You won't last a week. They'll never let you fly.
Faster.
This isn't a game for little girls.
Give it up!
Higher.
Further.
Faster. I'm kind of done with you telling me what I can't do.
I think there's a lot of resonant moments here. There's a definite subtext here about suppression. There's literally a plot line about being taught to hold back unnecessarily.
Right.
For the comfort of your male coworkers, essentially. So, I mean, that's right out there on the coffee table.
And the Kree influence over the character, over the main character, is they have like a little device. It's not fully addressed. We don't know how it works or what it does, but it somehow is. It gives them the ability to turn off her powers. And they tell her it's what's giving her the powers as well. We find out that that's not the truth. But the fact that that's used as suppression, and there's a moment where she removes it and literally just drops the line that I have been fighting with one hand tied behind my back for my entire life, which is both a literal call out to this device that she just pulled off her neck, a literal call out to her life that we flash back on several times where she's made fun of, she's not allowed to fly in the Air Force, called out on the ball field. And there is the grander metaphoric meaning of that phrase that stands for the fight for women's rights right now. And so I think it was addressed really well. And I think that's where it probably does one better than Wonder Woman, because Wonder Woman comes from a culture that is very female-centric and is very empowering, I'm sure, to see on screen. But Captain Marvel addresses it a little more from a cultural standpoint than from an introductory standpoint. Like, Captain Marvel has been putting up with this her whole life. Women in the audience will probably be able to identify with that. Whereas Wonder Woman comes from a life of relative privilege. And that's empowering to see a utopia and everybody's doing well and everybody is doing what they want to and living an idyllic life. And then she has to confront it when she goes out into the real world. There's almost an aspect to that where it comes off as naivete, and that she has to learn how cruel the world is before she understands how it works. And I don't think that's as relatable. But then again, I'm a white dude, so I don't know. I don't know. I would probably give Captain Marvel the advantage on the political scale.
Maybe that aspect of it. I liked other political things about Wonder Woman.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Besides that dialectic, I think of the two, I'm a little more Team Wonder Woman. But they're never going to fight. They're in different timelines. Not even two such entities can fix these legal issues. I did love the final scene. They're like, "What? Now the time has come for you to really prove yourself and fight me with no power." Nope.
Yeah, I don't have anything to prove to you. God, that was so brilliant, because it gets ahead of every little fedora, pimple-faced basement dweller argument out there.
Technically, it's usually actually a trilby.
It knew it was going to get that pushback and just addressed it and said, "I don't have anything to explain to you." And that's what Brie Larson was saying, is this movie isn't for you and me, Matt. We can enjoy it. There's nobody saying that we can't do that. But it is not made with us in mind. Those moments that were included were not meant to resonate for us as an audience. It can resonate. I'm sure it does resonate. Like I said, we recognize those moments. But it's definitely going to resonate as intended, I think, with a female audience.
It's worth mentioning that if you can only enjoy movies if the lead is you, you're the reason there's Mary Sue's.
Right.
Get over it for one movie at a time.
Well, and that's the other thing. You know, we said this during our Star Wars coverage, but if inclusion bothers you in a cast, I'm sorry, guys, it's not going to change. Like, Star Wars is not going to suddenly become more white again. It's not going to become more male again. It's time to start reassessing whether or not you're a fan of these franchises. Because honest to God, I could really do without a few less people in line. So really think about it. If it upsets you that women and people of color are in Star Wars, maybe don't go to the next Star Wars movie. Nobody's forcing you. I'm not going to hold a gun to your head. But I think we're about there. And if the fact that there is a female lead in a Marvel movie bothers you, we're going to get more of this. This is working. Like, the box office is responding. You lost. It's over with. It's done. This isn't for you anymore. But I don't know. Maybe that's a little too editorial.
You can bounce around, run up the flagpole, see how it plays.
All right, Matt. Well, any final thoughts?
What do you think of live action Aladdin?
You know,
yeah,
the teaser didn't do anything for me. That Super Bowl trailer really didn't do anything for me. The latest trailer, which I think dropped today, looks exponentially better. I can honestly say I'm a little more on board this time. But, man, I don't know.
You stumbled upon an opportunity. I can make you rich. Rich enough to impress a princess.
What would I have to do?
There's a cave of wonders. Bring me the lamp.
Oh, great one who summons me, I stand by my oath. Loyalty to Wishes 3.
I'm kidding. Watch this.
Watch out! You done wound me up. You ain't never had a friend like me.
Hey, can you make me a prince?
There is a lot of gray area in make me a prince. I could just make you a prince.
Oh, no.
Y'all see my palace?
You look like a prince on the outside. I didn't change anything on the inside. Showtime.
No, I'm in charge, okay? I say when it's time. Really? I thought a princess could go anywhere.
Not this princess.
Do you trust me?
Don't you dare close your eyes. Hold your breath, it gets
like, it just, it looks like a live-action port-over of Aladdin, and I'm kind of wondering why.
Did you see the Beauty and the Beast one?
Yeah, I did, actually. And it was okay. Like, I enjoyed it. I have a soft spot in my heart for that story. We did that play in college, so it's always kind of been nestled in a soft spot in my heart. But
I did not partake, so.
Yeah, I mean, it was okay, but it was another thing where it's like, this didn't feel super necessary, and the stuff they kind of added didn't integrate super well, and so I liked it, didn't love it, and I have the feeling Aladdin will... What I am honestly sure of now that I've seen this new trailer is that it's going to find an audience. Like, this will be a good movie to take the kids to, probably. I don't know if it's going to be necessarily a movie I'm going to be in love with, but again, I'm not the intended audience anymore. Like, Disney is not making high-flying musicals for me anymore. It's a different age. It's another game.
Oh, one thing I thought was really interesting in Captain Marvel, if we can actually throw it back a notch, something I had made a point to mention but then forgot to, is the scene where they fight in the rec room that they'd built for the Skrull refugee kids. Uh-huh. So they literally fight and break all this 90s superhero stuff.
Yeah.
Like, oh, did Captain Marvel kill your childhood? I thought that was kind of like, I won't say, it was an interesting little touch. Who knows if it was even deliberate? You know, sometimes filmmakers, they're shooting at, you know, thousands of dollars a minute. Sometimes they get a little sloppy and forget to check something for subtext. Maybe it was an accident.
No, but, you know, it's fun to look at things like that.
I was being sarcastic. I think it was deliberate.
But, yeah, for me, Captain Marvel's a pretty enthusiastic recommend. If you have liked other Marvel movies, you will like this, I think.
Just go watch it with an open mind. What else are you going to do? You're going to be the only guy that doesn't watch it? You're gonna stay home and be a hipster and be like, I don't even care about Infinity War.
Yeah, don't be that guy. All right, Matt. Well, I think that's about going to do it for us. We are the Nighthawks Podcast, a part of the Hello Sweetie Podcast Network. You can find us on iTunes. You can find us on Stitcher. You can find us on Spotify. We sure would be glad if you did. If your podcast aggregate has the option to leave a review or leave a rating, much like they do on iTunes, seriously, people, you would be doing us a real solid just to go ahead and give us a star review. Go ahead and give us a written review if you have the time. Like, really, it is a super big help.
I want to, like, if I can soapbox for a minute, we're at like an exact point in our life as a thing where there are, if every one of you converted one friend, like I hate to get all multi-level marketing on you.
Speaking of which, listen to the Dream podcast, but that's a whole other thing.
So dark to see how the sausage was made there. If every person currently listening made a solid recommend and recruited another person, I won't even do the stereotypical,
they tell two friends, and so on.
If you each just find us one new acolyte, we'd abruptly pop into a different tier of what we could provide and what we'd be able to pay for and bring you, and it would be definitely our next step as a thing. So this is me. This is me down on my knees. I'm begging you.
And also, if there is a movie you think we ought to cover, honestly, we're at the point in the podcast where figuring out what movie to do is the hardest part of the process. So if there is something you would like to see us cover, shoot us a message on Facebook. And we're super accessible there. Nighthawks Podcast on the old FB.com.
And if you already have, don't be afraid to tell us twice.
Yeah, we forget.
Because we are not... I know that, like, we seem, like, super organized and on the ball, but we're 0.75 as organized as you think we are. At best.
All right, Matt. Well, I think that's about going to do us today. Be sure to tune in to other Hello Sweetie Podcast Network shows, such as HSPN The Box, our friends over there, giving the take on pop culture, podcasts, television shows. I think Crystal is still going back through and watching old ER episodes. That's always fun to listen to. And also a shout out to the Cinema Queens, the Not Safe for Work queer film discussion podcast, which I have actually become a fan of. Tune in and listen to those, listen to us, and thank you. Thank you so much for doing so. Matt, anything else?
No, that completes me.
All right. Well, I think it's time for coffee and pie.
Oh, my.
We're going to sign off because it's almost morning.
That was a brick reference, people.
Now, sissy that wow.
Hey there, are you queer or some variation of it? Well, I'm Chris, and this is my co-host,
Adam.
And welcome to Cinema Queens,
where we talk about queer cinema.
Each week, we watch beloved queer classics, discuss them, review them,
and cover a whole cluster of topics from our favorite scenes,
what they mean to us,
how it relates to our current world,
and the best part, the cherry on top of the sundae, happens to be
gay rants.
So prepare your ear holes.
Hey, listen to us queens talk cinema. New episodes drop every Monday on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.